This is The Headline with Brandon Waltons, bringing you the biggest stories from across Texas. The Headline gives you the news you need to be an informed citizen.
Well, hello, everybody. Happy Friday, and thank you for joining us on The Headline. I'm Brandon Waltons, managing editor here at Texas Scorecard, joined, always a treat, a privilege, Michael Quinn Sullivan here.
Had literally no one else to talk to.
No, not at all.
Yes, that's exactly.
We had the most.
Everyone watching knows what that means. We had everyone's like, oh, you know, other people were busy, so, you know, hey, Michael. No, you're sitting here looking forlorn. Why don't you come in and visit with me today?
Hardly. Yeah, it's the first show of the new year.
It's like a, we're setting it out. A mercy invite.
We're setting it out on the right tone here. And we've got so much to talk about, too, because, you know, the beginning of the new year kind of means, you know, we've talked about it for a while. We've talked about it for months. But now's really when campaign season starts.
Yeah, that's right.
And as campaign season really hits into full gear, you're seeing grassroots organizations across the state, people like the True Texas Project, people like Grassroots America, We the People. You know, Wise County Conservatives had one a month or two back. These groups are starting to organize and host their candidate forums, inviting your statewide officials, right? Like governor candidates, people who want to lead the state. And yet you note in an article this week at TexasScorecard.com that there's been one notably absent candidate at all of those forums.
Yeah, it's been really striking that Governor Abbott, he has really for the first time in his political career, he has, you know, real big challenges, folks either with big names like Chad Prather, with resumes like Lieutenant Colonel West, with money and a background in policy like Don Huffines, and they're out actively campaigning, and yet Governor Abbott is taking kind of a, you know, well, I guess is, you know, federally called, you know, the Rose Garden approach. He's just not going to acknowledge the existence of the Republican primary, which, you know, that's definitely a strategy. But you know, visiting with a number of folks like Julie McCarty, as you note, her organization has hosted a couple of forums, as well as a number of other folks. And all kept using that it kind of communicates a, you're beneath me, you know, talking to, you know, Governor Abbott, talking to Republican primary voters, that, you know, this whole thing on March 1st, really doesn't matter to me, is kind of what the governor seems to be. And I don't think he probably didn't intend to be communicating that, to be clear. That's what folks are taking from it.
Well, when you see his messaging, right, he's done a little bit of messaging against Beto O'Rourke, talking about needing to beat the Democrats in November. And yet the criticism we've heard from some voters, some Republican primary voters, is, well, hey, what about me? What are you doing to earn my vote right now?
Yeah, well, and you know, you then couple that, you know, because of what I like to call the Fox News effect, you know, where everything is elephant versus donkey. You know, there is no, there is nothing else. It's all elephant versus donkey, you know, getting people to throw popcorn at the TV screen or whatever it is you do when you watch Fox News, I guess. And so as a result, you do have some folks, this is the absolute failure of public education, the failure of high school civics, where folks think, well, gosh, if I'm voting for Alan West or for Chad Prather or Don Huffines, then that means Beto's going to win.
Yeah, I've heard
well,
that
a lot.
Well,
that's a different election. You know, that's like saying, you know, because I'm having a hamburger today, I can't have chicken nuggets next week for dinner. What? Where's that a rule? You know, that's not a rule. But that's the, I think it's unfortunate that this kind of, you know, hyper elephant versus donkey means that some folks aren't recognizing that there is this responsibility to carefully weigh the candidates in these primaries.
Well, and we're talking about a Republican primary that's not the general election. And even then, right, people talk about kind of, oh, well, you know, some people might vote for Prather, some people might vote for Huffines. That's going to split the vote. That'll give Huffines the win. or give Abbott the win. Even in that situation, what Governor Abbott is trying to avoid right now is being below 50%, because that means a runoff, that means extra time, and that's usually a pretty perilous situation for an incumbent candidate.
Incumbents usually don't do well in runoffs. Incumbents in runoffs, you have to understand it's kind of the buying philosophy mm-hmm. of a consumer, that when consumers who have previously purchased the job services of Greg Abbott for governor, for example, or for any incumbent, when you get into the situation where mm-hmm. there are two, three other challengers in that race, and you've got more than 50%, purchase themselves West, Huffines, Prather, that suddenly when that runoff now happens, whoever is the other person paired in the runoff, a lot of voters have already made that biggest decision, which is I'm not for the incumbent. I'm voting for someone besides incumbent. Mm-hmm. So it's real easy to stick with that position at that point. And actually, it's very hard. And you've seen a lot of research been done over the years. It's really hard for folks after they have voted for someone besides incumbent to turn around and vote for the incumbent again in the primary. Let's all be honest with mm-hmm. this. The Republican is going to win in November. Mm-hmm. Beto O'Rourke will not be the governor of Texas. The only way Beto O'Rourke gets to be the governor of Texas is if Joe Biden erases the Constitution, takes the Constitution, shreds it, and the President of the United States appoints the governors of the 50 administrative districts or something. Uh-huh. That's how Beto O'Rourke, that's the only way Beto O'Rourke will be the governor. Chad Prather will beat him. Don Huffines will beat him. Alan West will beat him. Greg Abbott will beat him. Mm-hmm. This is not a question of, it's going to be a tight race. No, it's not. Beto O'Rourke is going to lose and lose miserably. Every single Democrat in the nation recognizes they're going to have a horrible election cycle. That's why you see so many Democrats mm-hmm. Resigning, retiring from office, because they know 2022 is going to be a horrible November for them. And so the question is not, is there a possibility that Beto O'Rourke wins? No, there's no possibility of that. Mm-hmm. It's, do you get, as a voter, the person you most want as your governor, as your state representative, as your member of Congress? And that's where we have to, as voters, kind of reject, again, that Fox News approach to every question being elephant versus donkey. Mm-hmm. Instead, we need to look as the grown-ups in the room, as the citizens, the leaders. We should look at this in the way our friend Joanne Fleming at Grassroots America, We the People, they don't talk about candidate interviews, they talk about job hiring. they do job interviews.
That's what this is.
We're hiring, we're trying to hire the best possible person to be your candidate and then to be your governor.
Mm-hmm. And there's, just a reminder, 39 days until early voting starts. Early voting starts on February 14th. The election day is March 1st. But speaking of Governor Abbott and his primary opponents, Governor Abbott did take a little bit of heat this week after his office sent out a notification to businesses and to state agencies telling them that on Saturday, tomorrow, they're required to lower their flags to half staff in honor of the departed Nevada Senator Harry Reid.
Former
Senator Harry Reid. Somebody who, when he was in office, was somebody who spearheaded Obamacare, was a liberal senator, was certainly no friend to conservatives when he was there. And it was interesting to see the reaction from some of the governor's primary opponents. You had former state senator Don Huffines out there first saying that with this action, Abbott has shown more respect for other career politicians than for conservative Texans. You had Alan West echoing that sentiment, saying instead of lowering flags for someone who did nothing for Texas, we should be focusing on ending the scourge of Texas troops in Operation Lone Star, kind of pivoting to some of the criticisms he has there. But then you also had Chad Prather, who took a different position, saying that human compassion should never be lost in the quagmire that is American politics, and that he didn't have an issue with that. I'm interested, if you're watching live right now, please drop in the comments, what are your thoughts on this? I know a lot of people have different opinions on it, but regardless, I think the bigger picture is it just shows you we're really in campaign season now.
Yeah, we're really in campaign season now. My wife and I have noted over the past couple of years, it seems like you know, flags are at half staff more than they're at full staff. It feels like sometimes that, you know, there's this, you know, we have turned putting the flag at half staff into some sort of, you know, the latest, you know, little member, you know, the all the colored ribbons people wear on their, you know, for all their causes and stuff. Now it's, you know, everyone lower the flag. And that kind of seems to sometimes cheapen what that
means.
Lessens the meaning. So, you know, I think there's something to be said about that, particularly when we start talking about, you know, long retired politicians from other states who, quite honestly, most Texans don't even know who Harry Reid is, you know, that kind of thing. And Prather makes a good point about, you know, hey, wait a second, we shouldn't politicize everything. But yet, I think that there, let's be clear, this is politicized.
Yeah. Well, and everything Abbott does right now is politics.
That's right. Yeah.
Because of that election. Speaking of elections, even with the election, just really weeks away, still question over 39 days till early voting. Wow. Yeah. Okay. Mark your calendars, get there early, line up. Like I said, it's February 14th. Great way to spend a Valentine's Day. A couple that votes together stays together.
Let's go vote. Yeah.
But this week, you had Texas Secretary of State John Scott, newly appointed Secretary of State, releasing a progress report on phase one of what they're calling their quote-unquote full forensic audit of the November 2020 presidential election. People may remember this is something that was put into action sort of at the behest of former President Donald Trump to Governor Greg Abbott, although it's not exactly what he was asking for. But you had the Secretary of State out there. They audited four counties, Dallas, Tarrant, Harris, and Collin counties. And the fact is that they did show some vote discrepancies, right, in these counties. 449,000 duplicate registrations, 225,000 deceased voters, 1,600 felons. I could go on and on through some of those numbers.
But those are just in four counties.
Yes, that's just four counties. And even this week, you had the Secretary of State saying at the Texas Association of Elections Administrators Conference, which our own Aaron Anderson attended and wrote about at TexasScorecard.com, that the key to addressing this crisis of confidence right now in elections is going to be transparency at all levels, especially the local level of administering these elections.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, when we talk about election integrity, right, I mean, it's one thing during a legislative session when it's one of several political issues that's moving through the body. But when we're talking about elections actually being on the horizon, I think talking to people, talking to Texans, you know, it's a real concern. Some people really wonder whether or not their vote is going to count. And that, I think, could be detrimental for the process.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the point that Secretary Scott made was that, you know, the worst thing imaginable in all this is for people to say, you know what, there's so much cheating, there's so much, fraud, whatever. I'm not even going to mess with voting.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, when folks take that view, you know, that, you know, everything becomes kind of the self-fulfilling prophecy at that point. This is, you know, why, and it's not to say, you know, you shouldn't be concerned with fraud, that you shouldn't be concerned, you know, with those things, but rather why it is so critical that the legislature, the governor, these local officials all heed that warning about transparency.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, for a while we have kind of slid into this place where, you know, you're really not supposed to ask questions about how the election, you know, you're just supposed to trust them. Well, no, we actually have an entire system of government built around you don't trust the people in government. That's literally how our founding fathers established this country, was around the idea that we don't trust people with power. You don't trust them. It doesn't matter that you go to church with them. It doesn't matter that their kids and your kids are on the same soccer team.
Mm-hmm.
None of that stuff matters. You're not supposed to trust them. That's the basis of our system of government. And because, ideally, theoretically, those folks respond by doing things, you know, over the top to show their trustworthiness, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when, you know, you start seeing, you know, counting stations close down, making it hard for people to observe, that's when all of us, you know, start having our inherent lack of trust, correct lack of trust, verified. And to Secretary Scott, whatever else you might think about the job he's doing, He's absolutely right about that.
Absolutely right. Yeah, absolutely. And looking at phase two of this audit, supposed to be completed in the spring, and we'll get some more information about that once that comes out. But what do you do when you do find voter fraud? Well, right now, after a recent Court of Criminal Appeals opinion, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton, and really the whole office of the Attorney General, will not be able to prosecute election fraud cases after a recent court opinion. Essentially, the Court of Criminal Appeals, that's the highest criminal court in Texas. We have essentially two Supreme Courts in Texas. There's the Texas Supreme Court, which is the highest civil court. And then there's the Court of Criminal Appeals, which is the highest criminal court. They, in a recent unanimous decision, asserted that the Constitution actually doesn't grant the Attorney General the power to go after election fraud cases, which leaves it in the hands of county attorneys, district attorneys, which could be potentially problematic. Attorney General Ken Paxton has noted, literally in a tweet after that decision, said, "Now, thanks to the Criminal Court of Appeals, Soros-funded district attorneys will have sole power to decide whether election fraud has occurred in Texas." Certainly, when we look at where election fraud happens the most, a lot of times it's in counties where perhaps the district attorney is tied into the political machine there, right? Perhaps there's a conflict of interest. The Texas legislature, however, could fix this by going and passing a constitutional amendment, but they'd have to be called into session to do that.
Yeah, and the governor has made it clear he is not interested in special session as much as possible. You know, look, I mean, the a couple of things that that stand out is set aside for a moment the partisan makeups of these district and county attorneys, and maybe they're in on it and that kind of thing. There's also this legislatively created problem from the last special session where they've reduced the incentive for district and county attorneys to prosecute election fraud because they've reduced the penalties. Election fraud cases, according to everyone I've talked to, they are difficult to prosecute. Mm-hmm. There's a whole lot of legwork. It's more than just, the smash and grab at a jewelry store. You've got fingerprints and security cameras with election fraud. It's a whole lot more work that has to go into that. And so as a result, if you're the district attorney who, right or wrong, voters tend to vote for district attorneys and prosecutors based on how many years did you lock someone up? Mm-hmm. And the legislature took that away. The Republicans and the Democrats, but the Republicans took that away this fall, taking away a lot of incentives for folks to prosecute. Now add on top of it this mess where suddenly the Democrat district attorney in Harris County, in Dallas County, these places where there have been the problems, they know they're the final authority. And that's again, from that system of checks and balances, that lack of trust we were talking about earlier, you really kind of need the attorney general to be able to step in because these things don't just affect, election fraud doesn't just affect Dallas County or Harris County. It affects people who don't live in Dallas County, Harris County. When you have Harris County, the fourth most populous place in the country, when there's election fraud happening there, it literally affects the rest of the state and even the rest of the country. You need the ability for the Attorney General to step in, and the Court of Criminal Appeals has taken this weird position. Attorney General Paxton has asked for a rehearing on that. It'll be interesting to see if the court, three of them, look, everything's, the guys are answerable to you. You vote for these folks. Three of them are on the ballot. One of them has as a primary opponent. The other two have general election opponents. We'll see if this, the threat of the Court of Criminal Appeals being held accountable by the voters in March is enough to make these guys say, "Wait, hey, we want a rehearing. Give him the rehearing. We'll do over. We'll see."
Yeah. Last story we have, also related to the Office of the Attorney General, which is that this week, Attorney General Ken Paxton has filed a lawsuit against the Biden administration to stop them from forcing the Texas Army National Guard and the Texas Air National Guard from being mandated with these coronavirus vaccines. This is a story that we reported about a month ago, that you have situations right now in the National Guard in Texas where soldiers are being told they need to get the vaccine or essentially they're going to be fired. They're not going to be paid. this is something that the governor really has oversight over. He has sent a letter. He has kind of threatened this and that. Now we've actually got a lawsuit filed. But, you know, there are people who have already been going without pay. There are people who have already perhaps gotten the vaccine and didn't want to based alone on these threats. And the question is, you know, we've talked a little bit about this off air. You know, when we look at these lawsuits that are filed, these are often slow moving things. And, right. you know, how many people are going to lose their jobs before something actually happens?
Yeah, look, it's great for you and I to be sitting here. You know, we at Texas Scorecard don't have a vaccine mandate. you know, neither one of us are threatened with anything mm-hmm. In this regard. So we can sit here and pontificate, you know, for months and months and months about, oh, yes, we're waiting for the court to make a decision. Oh, well, we'll show up the court decides. And we can have these great discussions about it because it doesn't mean anything mm-hmm. to us personally. On the other hand, if you're someone who's looking, I mean, I've gotten flooded with emails this week from folks who are looking mm-hmm. at deadlines coming up, middle of January, the end of January, you know, February 10th, you know, all these weird dates that their businesses have set in which to comply with vaccine mandates based on how they interpret how the federal government rules affect them, and including some soldiers and airmen who have been contacting us, looking at the orders they're getting. And so for those folks, it's not this esoteric discussion. They're thinking, how do I make my mortgage payment in February? How do I feed my kids in March? You know, all those kind of questions. Those are real lives being impacted, and it is and it's a little troubling mm-hmm. that the governor has taken this view of, well, we'll wait and let the courts work on it. You know what? The other people who aren't facing termination if they don't get vaccinated, mm-hmm. the U.S. Supreme Court, those nine folks can walk naked down the street and not be fired. They get that appointment for life.
Yeah.
You know, and so as a result, they're under no real time crunch to address this either. Mm-hmm. The governor of Texas should be stepping in, and either ordering the adjutant general, mm-hmm. you know, to take a different tact, bring in the legislature, and you know, stand up for these folks who can't stand up for themselves. I know a lot of folks get kind of confused. They go, well, gosh, mm-hmm. you know, these are people in the Army. They're in the Air Force. Mm-hmm. Therefore, you know, the Joe Biden's their commander in chief. No, actually, he's not. In the Army National Guard, their National Guard, the governor of Texas is the commander in chief, mm-hmm. unless they get federalized for a federal mission. Now, when they get federalized for federal mission, that's different. But day in and day out, members of the Army National Guard and Air National Guard, mm-hmm. their ultimate governing authority, the person at the top of the chain of command, is the governor of Texas. And for the governor to say, well, I'm just going to defer to the president, is kind of like your boss at work saying he's going to defer to the guy who owns the company across the street. You know, that's just not the way most of us would expect to see businesses operated. But that's the way, unfortunately, mm-hmm. Governor Abbott is approaching this situation with the Army and Air National Guard.
Well, we'll be following what happens out of those lawsuits as well. Thank you so much, Michael, for running through all these issues.
Maybe next week you'll have someone fun.
No, maybe. Before we go, I've got a few little housekeeping things I want to let folks know about. One, we've got applications we're accepting for summer and fall of 2022, as well as spring of 2023 for our Texas Scorecard Fellowship. If you're between the ages of 18 to 25, or you know somebody between the ages of 18 to 25, we'd like to spend some time with us here at the 1836 studios here in the Texas Scorecard offices. Please let us know. Find that link at texasscorecard.com/fellowship. It's texasscorecard.com/fellowship. And Texas Scorecard is hiring, okay? If you'd like to look at some of the opportunities we've got here in our office and across the state, go to texasscorecard.com/opportunities. Am I getting the URL right? Yes, /opportunities, yes. And that's where you'll find those jobs listed. I want to say hello to everybody watching. Thank you so much to Melody from Marshall for tuning in, Sharon watching from Fort Worth, Carrie Council from Brenham, who's on the campaign trail right now, Sean tuning in from Terrell. Thank you to everybody for watching. If you have any questions after watching this, you want to leave some comments down below, feel free to do that. But for right now, thank you for joining us. Have a great weekend.
Thank you for listening to The Headline from Texas Scorecard. We're live every Friday at 11 a.m. on the Texas Scorecard Facebook page to talk about the biggest stories of the week, so check us out there or listen to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, whatever platform you prefer. And while you're there, you can also check out the ever-growing line of podcasts and programming provided by Texas Scorecard.